Welcome to the Old Time Radio Daily Westerns. I'm your host, Andrew Rines, and today is May 12th, 2010. Today's episode is brought to you by Amazon.com. If you plan on doing any online shopping, first go to otrwesterns.com/Amazon. Today's episodes are going to be The Plaid Coat and Bell Brady Gesture. Now, the first one, original air dates April 13th, 1944, and the second one's going to be April 20th, 1944. Just to let you guys know, before we get started, I only have a couple more of these episodes, because I am going to do two at a time until they turn into a half an hour program. Right now we're in the 1944 season, and we gotta jump up to 1947 before they turn into a half an hour series. And those are the ones that are really good. Right now 15 minutes is just killer, because it's not long enough. That's why I'm doing these. I haven't decided if I want to jump, start doing four of these, or maybe three to do 45 minutes worth of stuff. But right now we're at 15 minutes. So let's get into today's episode.
The challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. The wild beauty of the Yukon stretched out before Sam Bartlett, an aged trapper, as he stood in front of his cabin. His eyes swept the stillness of the snow-covered country in a quick, appreciative glance. And then suddenly, he stiffened. Behind him, a twig snapped, and from force of habit, he raised the rifle laying in the crook of his arm. Bartlett was trapped between two men, both of them armed.
Look out, he's gonna shoot! Get him!
Benny, what have I done?
Looks like you dropped him all right, kid.
Benny, is he... is he dead?
Sure he is. Oh. And you killed him.
No. I didn't mean... you shouted. I lost my head. Manny, you have to believe me. There were two shots. I heard them.
The other shot you heard was from Bartlett's gun.
But I did not know. When I was indebted to you, you told me there was a way to make money quick. I did not think to murder. It was an accident, I tell you. It was an accident.
Don't worry, kid. I believe you.
You will tell the police that it was an accident?
There ain't no reason why the police should know about Bartlett stopping a bullet of yours.
Oh, no. No, Manny. If I tell them how it happened, he raised his gun.
You won't tell them nothing. It's your word against mine, see? You'll hang, Pierre, if I tell how it happened.
Oh, Yvonne. My poor Yvonne.
I was going to let you act as a driver for me, figuring it might work out as long as you didn't know too much about my business. Now, if you want to save your neck, I guess I can trust you to keep your mouth shut. Come on. Let's take those pelts the old man's got stored in the sled and clear out of here.
The Golden Horseshoe Saloon in Higbee City got its name from the huge good luck piece hanging over the bar. When Olaf Swenson first put it there, men laughed at it, talked about it, and wished on it. Now, the conversation-hungry prospectors found a new topic for discussion. For Olaf, the owner of the saloon, walked among them wearing a bright plaid coat with the naive joy of a child with a new toy. It was hours after Pierre Duval's unwilling participation in the murder of Sam Bartlett. Manny Winslow stood at the bar while Pierre sat at a table looking glumly at the glass in his hand. Yvonne, a singer in the saloon, sat down beside him. As the two young people talked, Pierre Duval lowered his voice, leaning across the table to speak. Listening to him, Yvonne went deathly white, her eyes widening in horror and fear. It was at that moment Sergeant Preston entered the saloon. His eyes roved about the room quickly as he glanced at the faces of the men. Olaf Swenson's face seemed hardly broad enough to hold the smile of welcome that creased it.
Hello there, Olaf.
Hey, Josh, hiya, Preston. Hey, been glad you come to Golden Horseshoe. It seemed like long, long time since you've been here yet, huh?
Olaf, aren't you warm with your coat on in here?
You like me in coats, Ryan? It's your snow. Hey, Curly, I bet you've never seen one like it in whole Yukon, eh? I'm going out to my brother's in a little while soon yet. Maybe tonight, huh?
You certainly have a lot of colors in it. Pete hasn't seen it yet. He's in for a big surprise.
Yeah. Look at the lining. I want you to see. Yeah, been good. Warm polar. Sorry, and you are my friend. I am happy to see you like I would be my own brother. You stay in town, huh, for a little time?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Olaf.
No?
Maybe a few days, maybe longer. I've just come from Sam Bartlett's place.
Ah, how is Sam? Hey, Curly, I was just saying today I would like for him to come to see my new coat I've ain't bought.
He won't be in today or any other day, Olaf. He's been murdered.
Huh?
And I'm out to find the murderer.
It was much later that night, and in the small cabin that served as temporary headquarters for Sergeant Preston, the Mountie listened intently to Pierre Duval's story. Yvonne sat beside him, her face strained and anxious, the glittering spangles on her dress reflecting the light of the oil lamp on the policeman's makeshift desk.
So that was why you wanted to see me, Pierre?
Yes. Now you know the truth.
I saw Manny Winslow in the saloon tonight. He's probably staying at the hotel.
I don't think he intended to tell me about stealing pelts and hiding them away. But when Bartlett was murdered...
He figured he could depend on you to keep quiet as long as he held the threat of exposure in his hand.
Yes.
Pierre said he would give himself to the authorities before he would go on stealing. Maybe killing more people.
You say you saw Sam Bartlett raise his rifle.
My word of honor, Sergeant. I was looking at him. He pointed it at me.
I'm putting you in jail, Pierre. Then I'll go after Manny Winslow.
It is he who is responsible. He is a wicked man, Sergeant.
Yvonne, I've been trailing him for many months. I've never been able to get proof of the robberies he's been committing. But now Manny Winslow is going to pay for his crimes. And pay plenty.
As Sergeant Preston walked the short distance with Pierre Duval to the small jail, the great dog King walked at the Mountie's side. Padding along in the snow, he thought briefly of the conversation he'd heard inside the cabin. To King, it meant little. And then suddenly, King paused, glancing up at the Mountie. But Preston seemed to be lost in thought, and King realized that his master was not aware of the figure watching from the shadow of several frame buildings. The light from the cabin made the Mountie and Pierre plainly visible, but the mysterious observer was shrouded from view. The jail door closed behind Pierre Duval and Sergeant Preston, as King raced toward the line of buildings, his curiosity aroused. Muttering to himself, Manny Winslow at first didn't see the dog.
Oh, he talked, the yellow skunk. Of all times for that Monty to hit town, and it would be Preston. Yeah. Well, Sergeant, I've heard a lot about you and that mud of yours, and it's going to be a real pleasure to pull the wool over your eyes. That must be the Mountie's dog.
King heard the ugly edge in the man's voice as he mouthed Preston's name. Almost at the same moment, he sensed the man's quick movement. Dodging swiftly, the great dog narrowly missed being struck by the barrel of the rifle Winslow swung.
Get out of here, you dumb mutt. Go on, beat it.
Reluctantly, King turned, running back to Sergeant Preston.
Hey, fella! He's
After his encounter with King, Manny Winslow had walked quickly to the back of the Golden Horseshoe Saloon. He saw Olaf's sled harnessed and knew that the big suite had not yet left for his brothers. The saloon was quiet and empty as Olaf stepped out into the night.
It is good out.
Winslow swung his rifle for the second time in the space of a half hour.
Better tie him up. He won't be out long.
Winslow worked quickly. He dragged Olaf Swenson's inert form back into the emptied room of the saloon.
Once inside, he took the plaid coat from the Swede, bound his hands and feet, gagged him, and smiled as he pulled the coat over his own Mackinaw.
Thanks for the coat, Swenson. If you'd have kept that big mouth of yours shut about going out to your brothers, I wouldn't be able to get out of town without that Mountie spotting me. Even with the moon out, he'll take one look at the coat and it'll be all right. I'll fool the Mountie and that dumb pooch of his at the same time.
Leaving Higbee City's one hotel, Sergeant Preston frowned.
The clerk says he hasn't been in, fella. He either suspects Pierre came to me with his story and has left town, or he doesn't know we're looking for him.
Man and dog walked along the moonlit street. King's ears stood up sharply when he heard the sled pulling away from the back of the saloon. Sergeant Preston looked up to see a great figure in a plaid coat head toward the northern trail.
Well, King, old boy, there goes Olaf.
Olaf? King glanced at Preston.
Olaf's so proud of that coat of his, he's taking to the trail at this hour to show it off.
The great dog looked after the sled as it moved toward the town's outskirts. In the light of the moon, King saw the man, and the coat that to Sergeant Preston's eyes was so gaudily colored appeared to the dog as so many varying shades of gray. The scent King caught was not the scent of the man Preston called Olaf. King knew Olaf. Olaf was a friend of his master's. But the one who had struck out at him in the darkness such a short time before proved himself an enemy. He was puzzled. It was odd that Preston should have mistaken this man for Olaf.
Now, what's wrong, fella?
Impulsively, King raced after the sled, stretching his legs in a long, powerful stride. Why had the man wanted to watch Preston without being seen? As King ran, he determined Sergeant Preston should know the man in the sled was not a friend. In one leap, King was on the land, throwing him off balance, and together they fell in the snow.
A dog! A sled! I rifled down the sled! The dumb mutts have kept on running!
Sergeant Preston had been amazed as he saw King race after the sled. When he saw King jump the man, he ran toward him.
King boy!
Get off of him! I had my gun!
Now, wait a minute. Winslow! All right, King. Quiet, boy.
This dumb mutt of yours tried to...
You're covered, Manny. You can turn around right now and walk toward the jail.
In Higbee City Jail, a half hour later, Sergeant Preston faced his two prisoners.
You admit you stole Bartlett's pelts in Winslow.
Yeah, I admit that, all right. But that's all you can pin on me, Monty.
Where were you when Pierre fired at Bartlett?
He was in back of Bartlett.
I'll answer my own questions, punk. Yeah, I saw it all. I was in back of Bartlett.
Pierre says there were two shots.
One from his gun and one from the old man.
No, Manny, not from the old man's. From yours. Pierre's bullet never hit Sam Bartlett. He died with a bullet in his back.
What?
Bartlett's gun hadn't been fired. I found him about 2 hours after the murder. So by your own admission, you were behind him, Winslow. I arrest you for the murder of Sam Bartlett.
Oh, I cannot believe my ears. I must tell Yvonne.
You'll have to tell your story to a jury, Pierre. But I have a hunch your sentence for participating in the robbery will be light.
The two prisoners were locked in their cells when Sergeant Preston turned to King. The great dog had not known whether the Mountie would reprimand him for jumping the man on the sled. And as he watched the sergeant talk to Pierre and Winslow, he began to think he'd been right to try to make the Mountie see the identity of the man he thought to be Olaf. And now, with Preston patting his head, King was sure.
King, old boy, I owe you an apology. I thought you'd made a mistake. You thought he'd fool us with a plaid coat. And he did fool me. But Manny forgot that dogs are colorblind. That rainbow didn't mean anything to you, did it?
Just now I get out of the ropes. That Winslow, he... Why, Sergeant. Why you grin at me so like that boy?
Winslow's locked up, Olaf. And your coat's safe. It's over on the chair.
Mean coat ain't been stolen.
You have King to thank for it.
Well, by yumpin yimini.
Yes, King, old boy. Thanks to you, the case is closed.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit. And all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They are sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Real quick, I want to mention the great deal that Audible is offering today. If you go to otrwesterns.com/book, you can get a 14-day free gold account and your choice of a free audiobook. Audible has over 75,000 audiobooks and more. Also, Audible works with over 500 devices. For more information, go to otrwesterns.com/book.
The Challenge of the Yukon. The Wonder Dog King, swiftest and strongest of Eskimo lead dogs, blazes the trail through storm and snow for Sergeant Preston as he meets the Challenge of the Yukon. Sergeant Preston was typical of the small band of Northwest Mounted Police who preserved law and order in the new Northwest country, where the greed for wealth and power led to frequent violence and bloodshed. But in spite of the odds against them, Sergeant Preston and his Wonder Dog King met that challenge, and justice ruled triumphant. The Palace Cafe in Dolphin City was owned by Belle Brady, a woman as beautiful as she was shrewd. And beautiful women were not seen often in the Yukon in 1898. She sat listening to a well-dressed man, the light of the oil lamp shining on her flawless skin and catching the glitter of the diamonds sparkling at her throat and wrist. At intervals, her eyes moved to the door of the cafe, sweeping over the tables where men were playing faro and chuckaluck for fabulous stakes.
Belle, you're not listening to me.
Sure, I heard what you said, mate. I've heard that story so often I could steal it off myself. Almost word for word.
No. This time it's different, Belle. I tell you, this claim is the richest that's ever been found on the Yukon. Why, it'll turn up so much pay dirt, it'll make your investment the best thing that ever happened to you.
What investment?
Your investment in the claim. Why, with you to grubstake me, honey,
Now, wait a minute. You're putting the cart before the horse. I'm not grubstaking you this time.
Now, Belle, you're kidding. Well, you could sell that rock you got on your little finger and never miss it. I don't need much.
Now, last time I staked you, you lost the money in poker. Time before that, you met some friends of yours. Celebrating in Dawson ain't my idea of digging for pay dirt, Nate. I'm interested in charity, but...
Charity? Why, you... Maybe if the money had come to you asking to be staked, it'd be a different thing, huh?
Sergeant Preston is a gentleman, and what's more, he's honest.
A two-year-old could see you're sweet on him, Belle. The Belle of the Palace. Throwing her heart away on a mountie that won't even look at her.
Yeah? Well, that's no my business, Date. You open your mouth around here once more, and I'll see that you're thrown out of the place.
You're going to be sorry for this, Belle. I'm not forgetting it.
See that you don't. You better have dust in your pocket. Those drinks aren't on the house. Did you see anything of Sergeant Preston, Shorty?
Yeah, not yet.
Thanks. There he is now. Glad you could come, Sergeant.
We'd have been here sooner, but Padre couldn't get away.
How are you, Belle?
Can't complain, Padre. Come on over here. I want to talk to both of you.
Belle.
You see, it's like this. I've made a lot of money up here, and by your books, Padre, I guess I haven't been any saint. The way I feel, this country's done a lot for me, and I want to... Well, do something for it.
Why, what do you mean, Belle?
Don't know how to go about it or what to do. I sent for you two because I figured you'd know what's needed. I got the cash and I'll put it in any charity or improvement you agree on.
That's a marvelous gesture, child. And if I might suggest something...
Go ahead, Padre. I was hoping you'd have something to say.
I've known of countless hundreds of men and women who've died of starvation on the remote trails up here. On the more traveled routes, of course, the cases are rare. But if we could establish points along those remote trails where men and women could find food, it would be a great thing. It would save a lot of lives.
You're right, Padre.
You both agree on it, then that's what I'll do. I'll give you the money, and you can go ahead.
Well, it costs quite a bit.
I don't care how much it costs. You and the sergeant here can kind of map out the places where it'd be best to put the food. I'll worry about the rest.
Your unselfishness is very commendable, Belle.
Not much, Padre. Us Bradys never forget a good turn. Yukon's been good to me.
Well, Sergeant, I think the best thing to do would be for us to set up the food caches together. You're more familiar with the trails than I am.
I can be ready to start whenever you are.
I'd like to get going on it immediately.
All right. King and I can be set to march tomorrow morning, if it's convenient with you.
Fine. I'll see you in the morning at about 7 o'clock.
Right.
Well, I've got to get back to my cabin.
Good night, Potter.
Good night, brother.
Good night to both of you.
Yep. Well, I think I'll be leaving, too. King and I are going to help on that job of yours, Belle. We have a lot of preparations to make.
Well, can't they wait? It isn't often I have the chance to talk to you. Besides, I didn't get all dolled up tonight just to show my new dress to the boys.
Well, there's one of them over there who seems very impressed with it.
Nate. He doesn't matter.
We'll stop by to see you before leaving in the morning. Come on, fella.
All right, Sergeant. Good night.
Good night, Belle.
I wasn't very impressed with your generosity. I'd call that a brush-off.
Yeah? Well, nobody's asking your opinion, Nate.
Well, I'm giving it, see? You're willing to feed the hungry lady, Bountiful, but you won't grubstake me. Now, remember that. You can take it from me. The Mountie's going to regret the day he ever laid eyes on you.
A week after Preston and the Padre left Dolphin City, the Mountie halted his dogs on the trail.
Oh, King, hold you huskies. Well, Padre, I guess this is where I leave you. You'll be heading back to Dolphin City.
That's right, Sergeant. I'll miss your company the return trip, but I suppose we'll meet in town soon again.
Well, King and I'll be there in about 9 days, I think. We ought to have enough supplies, but since we run low, we'll pick some up along the trail.
Exactly what I plan to do. I'll cover ground faster if I don't load the sled with a lot of food. Well, goodbye, Sergeant. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Padre. Same to you. All right, fella.
On King! On you, Hunky!
The Padre turned his sled around and headed back along the trail, while Sergeant Preston, with King leading his dogs, continued toward the country of the Yukon Indians. Two days passed, and the Mountie retraced his way along the trail, unaware of the situation that the Padre was even that moment facing as he stopped at one of the places where supplies had been left the week before.
I don't understand this. Every place I've stopped expecting to find food has been completely bare. Almost as if someone were systematically looting the place. Oh, no, it couldn't be that. No one would steal food, every last bit of it. Yet I know it isn't possible for so much food to disappear in a few days. Well, I'll just keep going. Perhaps I'll find some at Logan's Rock.
But at Logan's Rock, there was no food. Nothing had been left. The Padre strained his eyes over the glare of the snow and tried to ignore the hunger he felt.
Dogs can't keep going much longer. I must reach the cabin. It can't be more than 50 miles from here. Surely there'll be something to eat there.
With the courage born of an inner strength, he urged his dogs on. And then, as the cabin loomed before him, he saw smoke coming from the chimney. Approaching, he recognized the supplies stacked outside the door. Slowly, he walked past them.
Well, that ain't the Padre. Looking kind of peaked, too. Come on in and shut the door.
Why are you holding a gun on me?
Just a bit of self-protection, that's all.
I'm not armed, Mr. Silvers. There's no need of that. I want to know what those supplies are doing stacked outside the cabin.
Yeah, I figured you'd ask that question. I'm kind of settling a personal grudge. As soon as the ice breaks, I'll put them in a boat and take them down the river. Make some money on the deal.
No.
That's what I'm going to do, Padre. Neither you nor the money will stop me.
For a second, the Padre thought of the men he'd known who died of starvation on long and bitter trails. and his heart was filled with a fury against the man whose selfishness might deprive others of their lives. His first impulse was to disarm him. Moving quickly, he caught Nate Silver by surprise.
Boy, you... I'm sorry, you can't... The lamp is busted. The place will be on fire.
I'll brain you with this chair, you meddling fool.
Oh.
Now to get out of here before I'm burned alive.
A few moments later, King, running far ahead of Sergeant Preston's pack of dogs, saw Nate Silvers come from the burning cabin. The man carried the gun he had picked up from the floor after he struck the Padre. King jumped, knocking the gun from his hand. Realizing that the Mountie was near the cabin, Nate Silvers ran to where his dogs and sled were waiting.
Mush, you husky! Mush!
And as King hesitated, the sled disappeared through the timber. The great dog sensed that the man who had carried the gun was trying to evade Preston.
Oh, you husky! Oh! King, did you hear that?
Help!
That's the Padre. We've got to get him out of there.
King felt that Preston should know about the man who had just fled through the trees. But he sensed, too, that his master's first concern was for his friend trapped inside the blazing cabin. Instantly, he raced toward the building. The smoke was suffocating. The great dog's eyes blurred momentarily. And in the fury of the fire, he stopped, trying to locate the Padre.
Help!
In all his days on the trail, King had never faced such an experience. His feet were scorched as he made his way over to where the trapped man lay on the floor, pulling himself through the smoke. Just as the dog reached him, the man's strength seemed exhausted. He was motionless. And the dog's heart sank with the heavy fear that this friend of his master's might be dead. Slowly, with his teeth in the Padre's coat, King pulled him back toward the door. It was a half hour later. The cabin was a smoldering ruin, but the Mountie, the Padre, and the great dog were safe outside.
He saved my life, Sergeant.
I know, Padre. Good fella, King.
But Silvers, where'd he go?
I found tracks in his gun at the back of the cabin. He's managed to make a getaway. But we're going after him.
And the supplies?
The fire never touched them. As soon as we find Silvers, we'll put them back on the trail. From what you've told me, Padre, that man has a lot to answer for.
King was soon leading Preston's pack of huskies over the trail Silvers had taken. The Padre traveled in the sled while the Mountie rode the runners. 4 days passed, and at a point where the trail turned sharply, King stopped over the body of a man who'd fallen in the snow.
Silvers, Padre.
Oh, is he?
Yes, he's dead. No sign of his sled or dogs. He was on the trail a long time, but it wasn't the cold that killed him.
The mills grind slow, but they grind exceeding small.
Slow? Yes, it was a slow death of starvation for Nate Silvers. When he looted the supplies along the trail, he cut himself off from all food. He was too weak to go any farther. And the cold finished what his greed began.
It was a week later. The Padre and the Mountie had made their way back along the trail, restocking the places they had set up for hungry travelers. And at the Palace Cafe in Dolphin City, Belle Brady listened to their story.
Why, I'd never have asked you to do it if I'd known you might have been killed because of a little food.
Little food, child. Remember, a bit of food might have saved Nate Silver's life. He was only one man, Belle. Others will need food just as much, but they'll be different. They'll bless your generosity.
And the Padre was right. Around the warmth of pot-bellied stoves throughout the great North Country, the story was told and retold of how a valiant dog saved the life of one of the men who'd made Belle Brady's unselfish wish a reality. And though the story grew until it became almost a legend, the dog with the devoted heart was deaf to the praise of all men, save one.
Yes, King, old boy. You did a great job.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit. and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. They're sent to you each week at the same time. Jack McCarthy speaking. This is the Michigan Radio Network.
Okay, check out the show notes site, otrwesterns.com. Send me an email, podcast@otrwesterns.com. Call, leave me a voicemail, 707-98-OTRDW. Again, that's 707-986-8739. Tomorrow's going to be an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel. Until then, have a great day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.